Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Arnulfo, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm usually involved with Spanish-speaking groups, so I don't share much in English, so I hope this comes out good. But anyway, before I get into the topic, I'm going to can't go without talking a little bit about myself, about my personal experience, and the gratefulness and gratitude I have to be here at this event, with all you fine people. I see a lot of smiling faces. You know, I see a lot of joy in the people in the streets. And, I would have missed it all. You know, back when I was a teenager, I was an alcoholic. I had the disease 14, 15 years. I was smoking marijuana, using cocaine. I had 100 abstinences in my freshman year in high school. So things weren't looking good for me. And then one time I had when I was 19, I had a highway patrol officer bridge the gap so I can go to AA, you know. But I used to socialize. One of my better drinking buddies was actually my dad. So I went to my dad and I said, you know what, they tell me I have to go to AA. The court order says, oh, you know, I'm going too. I have to go do a court program too. That day we used to work together, so we used to drink together. I go, well, we've had a couple of beers. Oh, it's okay. We could go there. They don't check us there. So I show up to my first meeting when I was about 19 years old, and the first time when the person said this is AA. It's for people to have the desire to stop drinking. Obviously, that wasn't for me. You're wasting your time with me. Anyway, I did my six signatures I had to do. I really don't remember much. I remember the experience, but you know, I kept drinking. A couple of months passed. My father, where when we used to drink together, he used to tell me, "Didn't you learn anything? Didn't you hear the message?" But you know, since we were drinking together, I used to tell him, "How about you?" You know, we were there together. You know, we're hearing the same. So anyway, my father, he had like about 60 signatures to do, and he said, "You know what? I don't have time. I don't have time to get the signatures. I'm gonna pay your uncle so he gets the signatures for me." And I saw it as a little way to make extra cash. I said, well, I could go and get the signature for you, you know. So I started going and getting the signatures for my dad, you know, for the, you know, they don't ask for an ID or anything like that. And so time would go by and my father would say, you know, you're not getting the message. You're not getting it, you know. And I'm thinking, but I'm just doing it for the money, Dad. I'm not, you know, I don't have any intentions to... But you know what? It says bring your body and the mind comes after, something like that. I was, So I was young. I managed to stay in AA for a short period of time. When I was 20 years old, that was before I was married. That was before I met my wife. I actually stayed sober for close to 8 years. Then I had a relapse. I don't blame it on anybody. You know, obviously, you know, I was involved in service. I was involved in a lot of meetings and active. If I'm the one that had the disease, my wife didn't. She didn't understand. I started having problems attending too many meetings, too many service commitments. You know, you're out of the house too much. I didn't know how to manage it. And, you know, I stopped going to meetings and, you know, it's obvious what was to come, right? So I had a relapse thinking... I'm not going back to AA. That was a waste of time, you know, because, you know, but afterwards, the higher power, God, as I conceive him, he had other plans for me. And after a bunch of more problems with the law and everything, September 22nd, 2002, that's my new sobriety date, going on 13 years. Yeah. I don't count the first eight. I don't count them. You know, I was on the program for almost 8 years, but I don't count them. You know, it's just, this is my sobriety date. Is. So anyway, so I got back to AA, and, you know, I started getting back involved in service, because that's one of the things I do enjoy in AA. You know, that's one of the things, you know, I thank God for having me in this program and giving me that spirit of service. I've been a GSR, and, you know, I was a DCM. And then the Area 5, which I belong to, Area 5 of Pacific Region, there's a lot of active members and, you know, a lot of people that put a lot of hard work and dedicated, just like you are, because I'm surprised to see a lot of people here in the treatment. You know, I talk to people, and I get motivated because of the enthusiasm they have towards the bridging the gap. The chair asked me if I wanted to be the area chair, wanted to be in this committee. I accepted. So I'm just learning. I'm just getting to know what the Bridging the Gap program is all about. So I'm going to read a little bit about here. You know, we in Area 5, we have an Area 5 Bridging the Gap kit like you probably a lot of areas have. And, you know, one of the it says the purpose of the temporary contract program is to bridge the gap between AA meetings in hospitals and treatment facilities and the first AA meeting upon release in the home community. Now, that's very important because we know I've been a lot of times, I've been incarcerated. And when I'm incarcerated, the first thing I think or I pray, the first time I even cried, you know, when I was locked up, and I was thinking, you know what, all I have to do is stop drinking. That's it. I don't drink, and I don't get myself involved in this. That's so easy, you know. So I was there for 72 hours. When I got out, the first thing I did was went to the liquor store to celebrate because I was free again, you know. So I realized, you know, when somebody gets released from a treatment facility, the critical first 24 hours, we have to make sure the person has the information needed to give them that opportunity, the same opportunity we had. The same opportunity that was given to us to hear the message. And, you know, obviously, we in AA, we don't make decisions for anyone. Everyone makes their own decisions. We don't recruit our members. But at least we have to provide them with the necessary tools or the information so they can attend a meeting, so they could know there is a solution out there. So part of my service in AA, in area, I get emails from different districts or different areas. They send me the name of the contact person, the treatment facility, and then my job as an area chair is to contact the local district, and we work with a list, a contact list, to see who's available or who's volunteered. Now, I think that's one of the most important things in bridging the gap is the volunteers, people that are willing to lend or free their time to help others. I've learned throughout my experience in AA that's one of the things that maintains me or secures my sobriety one day at a time, working with others, helping others. So we managed to do that and contact them and then bridge that gap, you know. In hopes of the person, you know, gives themselves the opportunity to stay in AA and obviously experience all the good things that happens when we're in AA, you know. So that's one of the things I do. It says here, informing and cooperating with other AA service entities in your district area, you know, which obviously, you know, in the district areas, you know, there's a institutions or hospital institutions or public information or other, you know, we all in AA, even though they're different committees, we're all linked together. The purpose is the same in AA to carry that message. So that's one of the things we do or I do. It says there's also some guidelines for temporary contacts, which when I was in PRASA, and was it Utah? Probably Utah. Yeah, well, that's our Pacific Region Area Assembly. in Utah. There's some guidelines, you know, because we in AA, we get excited, and sometimes we have to be aware of how we approach or what we relate, you know, to people. You know, it's easy. We've had this issue in our area, or this come up. Sometimes people, we try to give advice that, you know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I sometimes try to pretend like one. And you know, I tell people, no, you shouldn't take that medication. You shouldn't do that. Well, who am I to tell them, you know? But so, it says the temporary contact expected to make direct personal contact with a client while he is still at treatment centers, either by telephone, visiting the facility, attending meeting, or whatever contacts are necessary. The contact and newcomer should make every effort to attend at least one meeting together on the day of the client's release from treatment. Thereafter, for at least 2 weeks, the contact will endeavor to get the newcomer to a variety of meetings, introducing him to other AAs, especially members who might have similar backgrounds or interests. Very important, obviously, maybe when we make that contact, that person might not reflect as much with our personal stories, but introducing them to other AAs and letting them speak and talk to others for their personal stories, they might, you know, make that connection. So that's very important. It says sponsorship should be explained to the newcomer, who should be urged to obtain a sponsor without delay. That's tough, because now nobody wants to be. Everybody wants to be sponsors. Nobody wants to be sponsees now. Everybody just wants to sponsor. You know, yeah. Nobody wants to be sponsees. Just I'm a sponsor, and I don't. So a temporary contract should be an enjoying a comfortable, stable sobriety, preferably sober for at least 1 year. The series of phone calls involving busy people to line up an appropriate temporary contact can be very time-consuming. It is therefore important that the treatment facilities allow adequate time for the contact and the client to get together before the client's discharge date. So those are all guidelines. Obviously, here in AA, myself, in the area, you know, I count with a lot of DCMs. Like I said, this is a new committee for me. I'm pretty sure it's similar with other areas. But it's important for the committee chairs, myself, for Area 5, to be in communication and contact with DCMs in their districts to work to get that contact list, make presentations, work with the facilities, anything that can be done, anything that we could put action for that person that's still suffering from that disease. It would be benefit, you know, to a benefit for that person, and it is an individual experience. You know, that's what keeps me in AA. So that's part of my commitment with AA. That's a little bit about what Bridging the Gap does. Like I said, I've talked to various people, and I try to get the information from what other areas or states are doing. And I see that Bridging the Gap is, you know, people are very enthusiastic about it. You know, they're very committed, just like any other service or people that have that spirit of service in AA. You know, so I'm actually really glad to be here, part of this convention. This is my second international convention. I was in San Antonio. I'll try to be in Detroit, I believe, I heard. You know, one day at a time, you know. That's how the program works. So I'm glad to be here. You know, I feel really grateful. It's a privilege, you know, even though I had that relapse, I have the privilege of my kids have never seen me drunk. You know, I have a teenage son. He wants to become a police officer. You know, I just had my daughter, had her a sweet, we in Spanish do a quinceañera. You know, I would have missed all those things with my kids. I would have, you know, and when I went to AA, when I was at early, you know, late teens, there was people that told me, you know, we already did that for you. Save yourself 10, 15, 20 years. You know, we already did that. Arnulfo, you have the opportunity to live stuff or live a life you don't even imagine. You know, but at that time it was difficult. But now I realize the A, promise are true. I believe you. You know, and so I'm glad to be with our hero. I love you all. Thank you. Happy 24 hours.
Thank you, Alfonso. He mentioned some of the materials that they used there. I just wanted to point out I brought some pamphlets from the Southern Minnesota Area Temporary Contact Desk Program. If you're interested in taking a look at those after we're done here, they're up here on the front table. So I'd like to introduce our next speaker. I had a chance to meet Dane at our Bridging the Gap workshop weekend last year that took place down at the Kansas City Airport. We had dinner at some barbecue shack that was like out in the middle of nowhere. Deserted part of town. It was the best barbecue I ever had. And we've been friends on Facebook ever since. So right? And so here is Dane.
Wow. My name is Dane, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic.
Amen.
And I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. If I did not say that, I would be remiss in my sobriety. That's the message I carry. Thank you. I'm a crier. I'm going to tell y'all now. I was in the gutter. I'm eternally grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for saving my life, and I'm humbled to be here speaking. Excuse me. I'm a product of Bridging the Gap, personally. Back then it was called catch and release. My dad caught me, put me in jail, released me to his friend who was sober in another fellowship. They terrified me, so I ran to AA. I came into AA September 16th, 1984. And no, it gets better. I wanted to be special, and I didn't stay sober. I didn't have alcoholism. I had a people problem. You people are my problem, and I didn't want to be like you. You know, I was terrified, and I think that that's the thing I experienced most of my life was. The four horsemen, you know, especially loneliness and terror have always been with me. And so when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned something through getting sober, you know. I just want to say real quick that meetings are not the answer. The steps are the answer. The spiritual awakening. I come to meetings to share the message and hope and recovery, like I'm sharing tonight, a pathway that offers hope. So that you might never have to drink again. You know. Yeah. My sobriety date is April 21st, 2005.
Yep.
And I got sober. I went to treatment. You know, like a lot of us do, we go to treatment. We learn a lot of stuff that is all written in a book. This big blue book, you know. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's a wonderful read. If you've not read it, I recommend that you do. In there, it talks about getting sober. It's a roadmap to Bridging the Gap. In the chapter Working with Others, it talks specifically about what we do in Bridging the Gap. How many people here currently do service in Bridging the Gap? Okay, I just want to applaud you. You know, I got involved in Bridging the Gap. In my area, the General Service Office stopped doing 12-step calls. What they do is they just refer people to rooms to go to meetings because of fear, in my opinion. And where I do Bridging the Gap at, we created, you know, we have the Google Voice, and we have a phone number, and we print it on a card, and we go into treatment centers and jails, and we hand them out so that when people go to get out of treatment, they have their first contact with AA. They don't have to be afraid of approaching. You know, when I was 14 years old and I went to treatment, I was terrified when I got out of treatment. I didn't know where to go or what to do. And I wasn't about to walk up into a room full of you people that I didn't want to be like to try and find out how to get sober. And I had the good fortune of having somebody on the other end of the phone that met me and took me to multiple meetings. Not just one. It wasn't an inconvenience. They weren't afraid of me. I mean, we're the last house on the block. You know, we deal with the gutter drunks, the people getting out of prison and jail that nobody else wants to talk to or be around. That, you know, I needed help. And I got it here, you know. So who am I to say no? And that's on my heart, and that's why I do this service. You know, I think it's so important that every alcoholic have an opportunity to find the room so that they can find the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous. It has saved my life, and for that I'm eternally indebted. Okay, now that I got all that out of the way. In my district, I'm honored to be a part of District 10 in Miami, Florida. It's a sub-district of Area 15, where I serve as the Bridging the Gap coordinator. I started out as Bridging the Gap coordinator on the treatment committee. In my district, we have corrections who deals with the treatment with the corrections centers and the people getting out of corrections, and we have our treatment where we deal with the people getting out of treatment. And I'm privileged to say that we do between 15 and 45 bridges a month. We have a really awesome treatment chair and co-chair and committee, and there's a lot of people that do tireless service to make sure that the alcoholic gets to a meeting. You know, some of the things that we do is we instilled the, you know, I talked about, I don't know if anybody in here is not familiar with it or if you are, but Google, and no, we're not affiliated with Google, and it's not a paid service. It's a free service. But it's a way that you can have an anonymous phone number that you can print on a card that can be passed from chair to chair to chair to chair so that when you hand these phone numbers out to people, they can make a call. I mean, you don't have to even fill out a form. We do have forms you can fill out. I had the privilege of helping incorporate Bridging the Gap into our website. And so if you want to see what a Bridging the Gap website looks like, I have a website address I can give you here, or I can give it to you after the meeting. But there's a lot of information. It's a step-by-step guide. And what I did is I found that treatment centers don't really like you going in and leaving your literature. They don't like you. You know, the counselors want to be the ones to make that contact and make it part of their treatment plan. And just like in treatment or corrections or anything else, their house, their rules. You know, we have to adhere to what they say because we're there to carry a message. And the humility of that message is that we have no opinion. We're not here to change your rules. We're not here to argue with you. We're here to say, hey, what can we do? And please instruct me on the best way to do it. My experience is I went to the hospitals and to the treatment centers, and I got with the counselors and the caseworkers, especially in the hospitals.
Excuse me, I'm getting dry mouth
real bad. That happens. But I got with the caseworkers, and I, you know, I implored to them, and I started talking to them about what this program is, and I found that, you know, there's a lot of communication. If they have an opportunity to approach their clients and say, AA has this program, and it will help you get to a meeting, would you like to be a part of it? And then they fill out the form, and they email it to the Bridging the Gap contact, or they give it to the people that go and take the meetings in who bring it to us. And we're fortunate that we have the Bridging the Gap workshop weekend, and it has a database of people all over the United States, and I believe the world. I think we've grown tremendously. And what this does is when I get it as the Bridging the Gap coordinator for Area 15, the districts email or text me the message. They take a picture. They send me a photo. And I have the honor of being able to pass this information along to other districts, to New Jersey, to New York, to California, Utah, wherever these people live. And in my area, all the people in New Jersey like to come to Miami for treatment. You know, it's warm, there's sun, there's hot girls, you know. And, you know, whatever it takes to get you there. You know, it doesn't matter why you come. What matters is why you stay and what you do when you get there. And I found that that was one of the best avenues. Because of that, we've been able to really grow. And what I would like to say is this service is necessary. It's needed. You know, we've grown in the past 80 years as a fellowship. And Bridging the Gap has autonomy, just like every meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's different. And it varies from district and area and meeting to meeting. And it's something that needs to happen. It needs to continue to grow and thrive. because we have people that are dying, and we have people that need help, and I'm responsible. See, Bruce. what I'm trying to do, and they don't know it yet, Bruce has written a program that links into the FNV at the GSO, and it's really enabled our registrars to do their jobs easier. I'm trying to connect that with Bridging the Gap so that we can have seamless worldwide bridges. And it's a goal that I have, you know, but I need your support, and I need people that are willing to volunteer and step up. So go get involved in General Service. Go down there and ask them and say, hey, what can I do to help? Because you know it takes, well, you're going to a meeting anyway. You have to swing by and pick up a new guy who's terrified, who is you. You know, I am the gutter drunk. I am the guy laying there in the gutter, pissing all over myself, not able to stay sober. That's me. You know, when I look at these people, they're not somebody else. And I don't ever want to be there again. And nothing will so much ensure continued sobriety as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. And I love you guys. You know what I'm saying? Now, there's a lot of other things that we've done with Bridging the Gap. We've created a new pamphlet. I'm personally working with Icky Paw. And we have the young people who are into video and stuff. We're writing a PSA that we're going to take to the desk at the General Service Office and try and get it out there. I found in trying to incorporate PSA into the treatment centers and corrections facilities, it really helps if you can just email them a link so that they can watch a video, or if they can go on the website and see how Bridging the Gap works. It doesn't cost any money. It's all volunteer-based. It's as simple as you being willing to answer your telephone. And when you answer your telephone, you say, hey, where can I meet you at? Starbucks? Well, that's a great place. You know, I've done many steps at Starbucks. I've heard many fifth steps. I've done many fourth steps. But, you know, it's a great place to meet somebody and take them out there. When I came to AA back in 1984, you know, I didn't want to be sober because I didn't know what sober was. And nobody had ever told me that if when you find you cannot stop, or if once you start you have no ability over the amount you take, you're probably suffering from alcoholism. And I never knew that that's what alcoholism was. I thought it meant that I was unmanageable, or I got a DUI, or I couldn't pay my rent because I wanted to drink. Everybody can go through that. But the real alcoholic who needs a spiritual solution to stay sober, you know, when I quit drinking, my life got worse. It didn't get better. My solution quit working for me. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I worked the steps, and I met my maker, I stayed sober. And I'm really grateful for that. Thank y'all.
Whew. All right. Good afternoon, y'all. My name's Tamika, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Paseo group. It's in Kansas City, Missouri. I have a sponsor, I am a sponsor, and my sponsees have sponsors, and we all work the steps. I've had the opportunity to serve my group as the group institutions rep. Of course, you know, when you first come in, you get to clean the ashtrays, make the coffee, and then if you keep coming back, they let you chair a meeting, right? I showed up to a business meeting one time. And I got to serve my group as the group institutions representative. Part of my responsibilities was to become a temporary contact for Bridge the Gap. And they didn't just hand me a bunch of flyers and a bunch of information. They actually sat down, talked to me, explained to me. They actually took me along with them while they did a bridge and actually passed it on to me exactly how to get out there and help the next sick and suffering alcoholic. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous just like everybody else because people were getting on my nerves and it was the location, it was, you know, the money, it was all of that. And I finally ran out of bright ideas, y'all. You know, By the time I was 16, I was a full-blown alcoholic. I was one of those people that took a first drink when I was 6 years old, and I never forgot how that made me feel. I was comfortable in my own skin when I drank, and when I wasn't drinking, I was nothing nice. Alcoholics Anonymous helped me learn how to be comfortable in my own skin, and I'm so grateful for the fellowship and for the program for that. I went to treatment several times because, you know, the first time I went to treatment, I was 23 years old, man, and everybody was old, and you know, they had these smiles on their faces and all of that, man. I just knew something was up, and I just wasn't ready. I got all the information that treatment gives you about your mind, body, and soul, and all that. And I managed to stay dry for 18 months. I went and did something else, got a job, played house with the kids and all of that. But I got another bright idea. And that bright idea left me out there for 10 years. And during that 10 years, trust me, y'all, I learned that I am an alcoholic the hard way. My last treatment, I was in a battered women's shelter, and I had no choice but to let them know that, yeah, I got a problem. It's not my mom, it's not my dad, it's not the kids, it's not anything. It's really me. And so I surrendered. I came in this time, and I did everything that you guys told me to do, everything I was told to do. And it's not so much that I was, oh, gung-ho, ready for AA. It's just that I conceded to myself that I'm an alcoholic. I can't afford to drink anymore. You know, one of those things that the stove is hot, the water's wet, and fat meat's greasy. I got it. And so if they told me that, you know, stand over there in the corner and say your ABCs, I was going to do it if it meant that I was going to stay sober and I didn't have to go back to the life that I was before. So I came to meetings on a regular basis. I worked the steps with my sponsor. My sponsor told me if you want to stay around, you need to get involved and stay involved. And that's exactly what I did. In my district, when we go into the treatment centers to carry the message, most of the groups have business cards, and people are willing to hand out their phone numbers. We stay after a little while. We get to stay after a little while to talk to the clients, and they get to ask us questions. So it's kind of seamless in my district with Bridging the Gap, because when they get out, they've already, by the time they get ready to get out, they've already had contact with one of us. They already know where our home group is. And we're always partying and having cake, so they want to come over anyway. I've gotten to serve my district as a district institutions rep. And part of my responsibilities was to stay in constant contact with the facilities, with the treatment and the corrections facilities in my district. And I had the opportunity to introduce Bridging the Gap into the nursing homes and into one of the treatment centers that we have left, and really explain to them what we have going on. My personal experience with a bridge when I was a temporary contact, you know, we like to give a lot of excuses. I don't have a car. I don't know how to catch the bus, this, that, and the other. Well, I got this excuse from this one girl, but she was getting out. And I let her know that I understood and that I would meet her on the bus. And so that's what I did. I caught the bus, went down, got her. I told her to meet me, where to meet me at. And I showed her in walking distance where that meeting was. Oh, you don't want to go to that one? Well, let's hop this bus, and this bus, and we can go to this one. And I showed her around. So that takes out that excuse that you don't know where an AA meeting is. You don't know where we are. You know what I'm saying? At the area level, I have had the opportunity to serve my area as the Corrections Committee Chair. And I got to go around to the different districts in my area and give different presentations, including how to include Bridge the Gap in our service. When we go in there and we tell them what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, we need to include all the services that we have available. You know, we have Grapevine, we have special needs, we have corrections correspondents, we have Bridge the Gap. And that, again, it alleviates all the excuses. If you really want to stay sober and you're willing to go to any length, then call. Get in touch. Write. I'm actually in process of writing to another woman right now that's going to be getting out in a couple of months. And the whole thing is, like Dane said, is that I'm responsible. You know, if I want to... I'm a drunk, okay? And by God's grace and His mercy, I get to stay sober. And I only get to stay sober by reaching my hand out and helping the next drunk get and stay sober. And a lot of times, it's not up to me whether that person stays sober. It's that they know where to go when they're ready. Because like I said, I spent 10 years out there. And during that 10 years, I made a lot of cameo appearances to Alcoholics Anonymous. Come in a little loud. Stay a little loud. But the thing about it was, in my district, they were in those facilities. And they were telling us, and it was kind of pissing me off towards the end, because it was like the same people. You know, they were still sober, and they were still carrying the message. And they were still handing out that same phone number, you know. And but that's what I get to do now, you know. I'm sorry. By God's grace and mercy, my sobriety date is still May 10th, 2008. This is awesome. This is my first international convention, and I get to speak here. One thing that I like to say about Bridging the Gap is that it's almost like we're the front line for these people. You know, when all the cards are down and they say, okay, tapping out, I've had enough. They go in, they get a couple of meals. You know, they may, you know, get a little bit of information. We're the ones who can show them the way to stay sober. You know, it's about that maintenance. And it's a big responsibility, but at the same time, it's simple. You know, I'm going to a meeting anyway. I got to do what I got to do to stay sober. And if that means that I go back to the same treatment center that I went to and reach my hand out, I'm the one now that gets to have the same phone number that gets to stay sober and piss somebody else off because I keep coming back. You know, that's part of the blessing, you know. I've had the opportunity, you guys, to my home group sends our trusted servants around the country to share our experience, strength, and hope. When I was the group institutions rep, my home group sent me out to Sacramento that was my first Bridge the Gap workshop weekend. And just getting all of the information and taking it back. Being a temporary contact, y'all, it's like temporary sponsorship at its finest. All you do is you go and meet somebody. You maybe have a cup of coffee. You take them around to the meetings. In my district, we have like a couple meetings. You can spend the whole day going to meetings. You got your 10, you got your noon, you got your 2, you got your 6, you got your 8. Do that for a couple of days. And in the meantime, you're introducing them to other drunks. You're showing them, hey, this is what we do. This is what we do. And when it's all over and done with, you don't loan money. You're not a taxi service. You don't want to hear about the young and the restless. You're trying to save a life here. You know what I'm saying? It's truly been a blessing to do what I get to do. To be the person that shows up when that young woman is getting out, she's got her bags, and when you're getting out of treatment, your head is so full of everything. You know, you've got all these plans that you have to do. You've got all this stuff that you have to do, but you have to make a decision. And when we show up, we're helping them with that decision that they made to stay sober and take them straight to a meeting, man. You know, that's the slippery part. You know, they used to tell us that if you're not in a meeting the first day you get out, you're getting drunk. You know, and we just can't afford right now. You know, unfortunately, in our district, our treatment centers are closing. And so we have moved to concentrating more on the hospitals because that's what they're going back doing with us now, in the mental health facilities and the jails, and that's where we're going. You know, it's getting back in our hands. You know, taking care of our drunks. A lot of times they don't get to lay up in treatment. You know, 30, 60, and 90 days anymore. They're kicking them out in 14. Sometimes in detox, you know, you might get to lay around there for a week. So we have to work fast in my district. We have to be there fast. We're there often. We're there. I know my home group is, we carry the message somewhere 7 days a week. And there isn't a calendar day that my district isn't carrying the message somewhere. And we make sure that Bridge the Gap is there as part of our carrying the message. Is my time up? No? Cool. Okay, cool. So for the last 5 minutes, I just really just wanted to share with you guys that how proud I am, how humbled I am by this experience. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous back in 2008, I never would have guessed that I would be standing here now. That's for sure. I had a lot of issues. And now everything it's unbelievable. You know, when I was drinking, I used to drive a lot and I used to travel a lot. And I can't tell you where I've been. But since I've been sober, I've been on both coasts. I've been north and south. And I remember everything. You know, it's been 7 years since I've had to ask those three questions, you know, when I come to, you know, who are you? What day is it? And where am I? You know, and it's all because I made the decision that no matter what, I'm not going to pick up today. And no matter what, I'm going to take my butt to a meeting. And no matter what, I'm going to help the next sick and suffering alcoholic. And that's the commitment that I've made, and that's why I do what I do. It's a very selfish reason why I do what I do. It's because I don't want to go back. I don't want to take another drink because I'm truly convinced that if I drink, I die. It's simple as that. I know that times are changing. And I know that it's just as serious, if not more serious, for those still suffering alcoholics out there today because the treatment centers are closing, because there are cutbacks. And so I pass it on to my sponsees. I pass it on to the people that I work with. And I just make sure I do what I got to do. Thank you.